Mevorchem Achedesh Tammuz. The year is Tavshem Mem Gimel, 1983. The Rebbe delivers this remarkably insightful mimer, like on the concept that's found in this week's Torah portion, in a very unexpected and unanticipated way. Lahovin Ninyin HaNesachim. This mimer sets out to try to understand the concept of libations, Hamavur L'Rishen of Parsha Seinu, which doesn't show up until the middle of the Book of Numbers. So there's lots on offerings. We have a whole book about offerings. At the end of the Book of Exodus, offerings are copiously discussed when we talk about the dedication of the Mishkan, the whole Book of Leviticus, all kinds of details. Every korban under the sun has already been named and numbered. And yet, up until Parsha Shlach, there isn't a single mention of the wine that's poured with every single korban.
Right.
Not a single mention. It's actually shocking. A major part of korbanot, which is brought every single day, with virtually every single korban, nothing until the middle of the Book of Numbers. Only after the Jewish people spurned going into Eretz Yisrael, that's when Hashem gives this mitzvah. Which means, amongst other things, that for the first year and a few months of the offerings, until after Tisha B'Av, of the second year, there were no libations. There couldn't have been libations. The Torah never discussed it. It means there's actually a change in Beis HaMikdash services over a year, almost a year and a half into the Beis HaMikdash. There's this major change, paradigm shift. 1 second, make sure you say L'chaim. I mean, not literally, but make sure there's wine involved. What happened? The inyan ha-karbonis, the concept of offerings, kvar nizkar b'parshias shelifnei zeh, already mentioned in great detail in the previous parshas. V'hachidush, the novelty that we find b'parshaseinu, hu inyan ha-nesachim, is this business of libation, the wine that was poured along with the korban that was burnt on the mizbech. Shemakrivim im ha-korban, you brought along with the korban yayin, shemen, and seilas. There was wine that was brought, which is more like a thick, pasty wine, a base of wine, and then there was fine flour that was kneaded in oil. V'tzarech lahavin mahu inyana. We need to understand, what exactly is this? V'gam mahu akesher l'inyan k'nisa l'aretz. What is the connection between libations and entering the land of Israel? Clearly, there seems to be some kind of link, because it's only after the Jewish people find out that they're not going into the land of Israel for 40 years that God comforts them, and he says, but you will make it. Once you get to the land of Israel, you will make it. That's when the Nesachim will begin. Which then tells us that there were no Nesachim in the Midbar for 40 years. For the first year and a half, they didn't know about Nesachim. Then they continued to bring offerings, no libations. And they only started the libations 40 years into temple service. If there's a mitzvah, you have to do it all along. If it's part of offerings, if it's an intrinsic part of the korbanot, where was it until now? The whole thing on the surface is actually quite shocking. It's something doesn't seem to make sense. Something's not coming together here. And that's why this mimer unusually begins without a pasuk. It doesn't come to explain a pasuk. It doesn't come to explain a collection of psukim of verses. It comes to explain an overarching concept. This business of nesachim. This business of libations. What's up with it? What does it mean? Why did it show up now? And why is it somehow linked only to being in the land of Israel? Ulevarza, to explain this. Maybe Bilukut HaTeira Dal Terebe brings in his magnum opus of Maimorim, called the Likutei Torah, es Maimer Azal, a saying of our sages, which on the surface seems entirely outside the box, almost impossible to understand. That it says, Shemimenu, that this Chazal say, this idea will explain to you what Nesachim are about. Who Masha Amru, this is a Gemara in Brachas. On page 14, the Gemara states the following. Anybody who reads Shema in his proper time, but he's not wearing tefillin, it's like bringing an ascent offering without the accompanying meal offering, without the grain and flour that comes along. V'zevach, and a korban, which is usually a korban shlomim, a korban that's part burnt and part eaten, b'lei nesachim, without libations. The Gemara there, on a literal level, is trying to explain to you that even though wearing tefillin and saying Shema are two different mitzvahs, ideally one should perform both at the same time. The Gemara goes on to say that somebody who reads the Shema without wearing tefillin is meyud edus sheker al atzmai. It's like you're bearing false testimony because you said ukshartem la'isal yadecha. You should tie as a sign on your hand. L'titofes ben enecha, frontlet between your eyes, but you're not wearing it. So you're talking the talk, you're not walking the walk. You're a faker. You're just saying things. So if you say it, you have to do it. Therefore, make sure you're doing it. And what's the example? There are various karbanos that have one mitzvah attached to another mitzvah. And it's understood that if you bring only half the karban, you only got a lackluster mitzvah. Your mitzvah is missing major intensity, major fervor. Something's missing. So it's missing. If you're not wearing tefillin, something's missing. All right. What really is the connection, though? What does libations have to do with tefillin? What does reading Shema have to do with the karban? The explanation of this is as follows. Dehine gam kriya shema, v'gam tefillin, both the recitation of Shema and the wearing of tefillin, shteyen hein mitzvahs ha-Torah. They're both mitzvahs in the Torah. So if they're both mitzvahs in the Torah, they're both God's command, if you will. Both of them are the instructions of the Creator of heaven and earth. So what's the difference? There is, contentfully speaking, an enormous distinction between these two mitzvahs. The inyan kriya shema, the notion of kriya shema, inasmuch as it's all about verbalization, inasmuch as it's about actually saying the words of kriya shema, Krishma is mostly more than just mouthing words. It is not a verbal exercise. Krishma is Kabbalah's oil. Krishma represents the notion of accepting the yoke, being ready to enter into obedience with Hashem. Mesiras Nefesh, a person being willing to set aside all of their own desires and needs and ask the question, not what can God do for me, but what should I be doing for God? That's the question. It's not about me. It's about the Creator, Mesiras Nefesh. Give away my nefesh. It's not about my selfish and own concerns. It's about transcending that entirely. That's what Krishma represents. And that's what the notion of the Pasuk Rishon of Shema Yisrael is supposed to epitomize. It's only after the Kabbalah Sal Malchus Shemayim that Hashem is Elikeinu. And that then we come to the realization that Hashem is Echad. That afterwards it goes, Bepratiyes. It's then expressed in detail, Begimel Parshias, in the three portions of Shema that follow. As per the famous expression and teaching of our sages, which is also found in the Gemara in Brachas just a page earlier. Lama kadma Shema levahoyim Shemaya. Why is it that the Shema is structured in such a fashion that first comes the Shema and only after comes Vahoyim Shemaya? And the answer is, Kadeshi Kabul Alavel Malchus Shemaim Tchila. The first thing is accept upon yourself obedience. Yes, this is my God. And only after I accept upon myself, this is my God, then you kabel alav el mitzvahs. If you don't have a king, how could you accept his rules? First you have to accept upon yourself as the sovereign. And after you accept it upon yourself, you're sovereign. And then they say, then I'm going to accept to do A, B, and C. V'hainu, that is to say, the krishma in yonah harotze. Krishma represents the feeling of yearning, of desire, and craving to be close to Hashem. What's called literally a rush forward, a halo milmata lamailo, when a person finds themselves trapped in a certain reality and they're reaching beyond. They want more. They feel bogged down, inundated by the challenges of life. And instead, they'd love to leave it all behind. They'd love to be absorbed into the infinitude of God. They'd love to become swept up in the ecstasy and fervor and passion of love for Hashem. Everybody has a certain sense of frustration with themselves. Every normal human being has it. No normal human being at times doesn't feel frustrated, doesn't feel unhappy, doesn't feel unaccomplished, doesn't want something different. All of us, that's the way we are. We go through life sometimes feeling frustrated and wanting something different. What's the problem? There's no sound?
It's all fine.
It's all fine? Okay. So every normal human being experiences that. If you meet a person who says, I'm always perfectly happy. I'm perfect. I know everything is fine. One of two things is happening. Either they're using narcotics to put themselves into a happy state, which is already bad. It's already bad. Or something's not wrong. Something's off. Something's not right, pardon me. Something is profoundly wrong. The human being is built of mood swings. We all have them. Now, a person who has highs and lows, who's literally breaking the atmosphere and then crashes down to the lowest sea level, that's a problem, has an issue. That person may have highs and lows, which are too much for the normal human being to be able to suffer, and you may need to have some kind of medication to limit the drops, you know, the heights and the depth. It may be too much. That's an issue. Okay, fine. People have issues. There's nothing wrong. You have an issue, you deal with it. An ingrown toenail, you get the toenail cut out. You have highs and lows too much, so balance the brain a little bit. But everybody has highs and lows. Why is this? Why did Hashem make everybody highs and lows? Because the neshama has highs and lows. Why am I telling you that it's not normal if a person doesn't experience this? Why isn't it okay that every time I feel a little low, reach for some from marijuana? Give me a shot of Coke. Oh, I feel better now. The moment I feel a little, oh, that's it, right away, medicate. Why? Because when you can't go against yourself without getting scratched. You have to go with the flow of life. And the flow of life, the neshama, is by its very nature, intrinsically experiences a feeling of rush, a feeling of dissatisfaction, and wanting to come closer, and wanting something bigger and something better. And then what happens? What do you realize? You say, what are you talking about? Life's beautiful. If everything is right there, what are you running away from? All the things you're looking for is right in front of you. Re-embrace, re-engage. This is called in Hebrew, in the language of Kabbalah and Chassidus, Ratzi and Shev. Ratzi comes to the term Ratz, to run forward, rush, to run away from your reality. Everybody wants to go on vacation. Everybody's so bored, so boring. And they go on vacation and say, oh yeah, I can't wait to get home. I need some stability in my life. I just want to know that I'm getting up in the morning and I come back in the afternoon, no surprises, no shock, nothing different. I don't need any excitement in life. And then they come home, so stable. So plain. It's so. I need to go on vacation, and this is how the human being is. This is how the neshama is, my friends, and that's just fine. So, because the neshama is like that, what our job is to do is to harness these different feelings, not in an unnatural way, utilizing some kind of substance that does it for you. Then you lose the whole point of Yiddishkeit. If a substance does it for you, then the substance is serving God. Who has to serve Hashem? You have to serve Hashem. And you have to serve Hashem by dealing with these natural flows and ebbs and harnessing it appropriately. And this is the point of Krishma. Krishma represents halom ul mata l'mayla, inyan ha-mesiras nefesh. A yid is frustrated with life. Give it all away. Get swept up into some kind of spiritual ecstasy. And then, along with Krishma, what comes? Comes tefillin. Why is it so important to wear tefillin when you read Shema? Because tefillin is the exact opposite. Tefillin is not about meditation. Tefillin is not about deep, profound feelings. Tefillin is about tying it down, grounding, get it grounded. Tefillin, the whole Torah is like, and metaphorized the tefillin. Why does the Gemara say that in Kedushin? Why is the whole Torah like tefillin? It's this funny statement. Tefillin is one mitzvah, one of 613 mitzvahs. The whole Torah is like tefillin. Tefillin represents everything about Yiddishkeit. Why? But the answer is, because tefillin is about actualization. It's about sustainability. It's about grounding. And what's all of Yiddishkeit about? Vertical. Same thing. Sustainability. Bring it down into our realm. This is why in Hebrew, the language is very meaningful. If you look at the words properly, you'll see all kinds of messaging. The word tefillin is also linked to a Hebrew word called attachment. And it's in a very literal, graphic way. When they used to make pottery on a pottery wheel, they would add pottery. The wheel would spin. And they would add pottery. They would thicken the wall of the pottery shard, of the pottery bowl, by adding soft pottery, adding soft clay. And that process of adding soft clay, of fusing soft clay, is called teufel. That's what it's called. Teufel klicheres. Meloshen tfeilo v'yischabrus. It's about fusing substance. And that's what mitzvahs are about. Why? Because mitzvah, overarchingly speaking, comes from the terminology not only of instruction or commandment, but rather also connection. It shares a common Hebrew root with the word tzavta. How do you say a crew and your elav flight? A tzevet. What's the difference in a good tzevet and a bad tzevet? A good crew and a bad crew. A good crew works in tandem. A bad crew is good people working on their own. That's not a good idea. So you got to work together. It's about bringing it together. Tefillin represents actualization. Taking something from a lofty level and bringing it down into this world. Even though you say, what do you mean? Tefillin is different from the Shema. What do you think it says in the Tefillin? The parchments of the Tefillin have the writings of the Shema. Mikol makim yesh behem ritzuos. That's exactly the point. The box has the Shema. And what do I have to do with the box? Tie it down, fasten it, actualize it, bring it into this world. Shein yonim hamshacha lamata. It represents the idea of a downflow. It represents the idea of bringing it into the concrete, the actual. That's why there's an actual part of the mitzvah of tefillin which requires intention. And this is very unique. Only the mitzvah of sukkah has the same kind of thing, where kavanas halev, the intention of the heart, is necessarily a part of the mitzvah. The Magen Avraham says if you don't have the right intentions and you're putting a tefillin, you're not doing a mitzvah without kavanah. The mitzvah of tefillin was fulfilled in an unsatisfactory fashion. It's actually a portion, a part of the mitzvah. All other mitzvahs have kavanah. You should light Shabbos candles with kavanah. You should eat matzah with kavanah. But if you don't have kavanah, it didn't mean that the mitzvah itself is in any way diminished. But if you don't have kavanah by tefillin, the mitzvah itself is diminished. Ki teichin inyan tefillin, the whole idea of tefillin is lahamshach hashibud alev. Umayach, to take those feelings, to take those sentiments, to take those ideas, and to bring them lamata b'guf adam, down into the body. And that's, of course, why the tefillin are tied down to the hand, to the finger, which is the furthest extremity away from the heart. And then you have straps coming down that go down past the belly button, so to speak, bringing it down. Just like there's a distinction between Krishma and Tefillin, namely, they go in different directions. They have a common goal, but they go in different directions. Similarly, we also have the same difference between the offering and the libation. I mean, look at the inyan of the korban. What does a korban mean? What does the Hebrew word korban mean? Don't tell me sacrifice. That's a Greek word, the Greek idea.
Offer?
Yeah, closeness. No, it means lashon kiruv, because of closeness. Ukepashtas inyan. Shenetlun davar shabachutz. You take something outside the scrimmage, the orbit of holiness. Umakriv neis elakadosh baruch hu. You bring it closer on God's altar, in God's Beis HaMikdash. Bring it closer to God. That's the whole idea of korban. It's taking something which is outside the scrimmage of holiness and bringing it into the orbit of holiness. Until the mystery of the korban, it goes so close, you become so profoundly knotted, so profoundly linked, so profoundly fused, and you achieve such oneness and communion that it says that the mystery of the korban is able to penetrate or link up with and touch the very deepest mystery of the infinitude of God, as it says in the Me'amarim of Vasilagani. The inyan korban, the idea of the korban is lechem. It's like bread. That's what his metaphor says. What's why bread? Because it says in the pasuk, it's karboni, my karbon. What's the next word? Lachmi, my bread. Le'ishai, my fire offering. The k'shem shal lechem lamata. What does bread, material bread, do? What does it accomplish? Sometimes you don't even know what food accomplishes until you don't have the food. It doesn't just satiate. Satiation is nice. What if I give you a pill which could simulate satiation? Could you stop eating? A lot of people wish they could. Right? Maybe it's cute for a diet because you're simulating satiation, but at some point, what will happen? You'll die. Because without food, the body and soul cannot be stayed together. Even if you take away the pain, the only reason we feel hunger is because Hashem wants our body to communicate to us, you need to eat now. If somebody loses their appetite, that's a profound problem. We have appetites and steroids, that's also a problem. But the notion of having no appetite, it's like, God forbid, you know, when a person has no nerve damage, has no feeling. It's scary. You know why when you go off in the dentist, they put Novocaine, you load you up, and for the jewel, your teeth, so you don't know how to eat anything? You know why you can't eat anything? Because you could bite off half your mouth and wouldn't know it. Yeah. And a few hours later, you feel the pain. What do we have pain for? We have pain. Pain is a sensory. That's what indicates, hello, you got a problem. The skin has just been broken. So why do we have hunger for? So the body is telling us, you idiot, I need to eat. I need to eat, he can't starve me anymore. So the whole idea is to create chibur l'chaber es ha'nesham el v'guf, to keep body and soul together. Mm-hmm. So that the body will have enough strength to be able to hold on to the soul. Otherwise, the soul simply evaporates, flies away. The af shelifnei ze ha'guf u'betachas ha'shleimos, that even prior, though prior, the body was perfect. Let's talk about the first body ever created under the sun. The body of Adam Arishan. What did he eat? Nothing. It's perfect. Yitzir Kapash HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But nonetheless, just a body. A perfect body. A beautiful body. A wonderful body. What's one thing missing? It was a corpse. Other than it was a beautiful corpse, it was a great, everything was great. And what did it need? It needed a neshama. Like it says, Vayipach va'apa nishmaschaim, God first formed the human body, and after blew a soul of life into his nostrils. In order to keep body and soul together, so you don't end up with a ghost and a corpse. In order to keep them together so you have a person, what do you need? Bread, that's sustainability. You have to sustain life. What's the reason? Because a person is actually lower than the bread is lower than the person. That's why it has loftier sparks that fell. As it's known, whatever falls lower had a higher spark. Like the Arizal says in Parshas Ekev, and those psukim, the Arizal talks about the concept of sparks of holiness and that consumption, eating food, is about accessing those sparks so that those sparks are able to give you life. And the Baal Shem Tov says, what's the Avim Gam Tzmeim? Nafshu Mehem Tesatov. That they're hungry. Their soul is expressing itself. Soul. It's a body. It's a stomach. Stomach is growling. No, the Baal Shem Tov said this. The soul is screaming. Why? The soul is hungry for sparks. The stomach is hungry for food. You understand? How do you know when it's enough? Most people don't. Most people stuff themselves. The Rambam says the most unhealthy thing you can do is stuff yourself, overeat. More people today are dying from obesity than from malnourishment ever than in history before. One of the reasons why is we don't feel good. What do? Take a Tums, take a Valium, take something that can deaden the pain of overeating and eat more. Eat more and make sure it's even more sweet and make sure it's even more processed so it releases instantaneous serotonin. I get a feeling of pleasure for a fleeting moment and then it disappears. I must have to eat more. That's what it must be. So we become obsessed with food. You ever notice when you feed a baby that the baby at a certain point just pushes back? I'm done. There are no obese babies. I know most babies they don't look like Adonis babies, but they're babies. More the babies more or less look the same. And start getting older, that's when they start to change. Mm-hmm. How come babies are babies? How come no enormous babies, no sumo wrestler babies? Because the babies know when to push back. The babies are not, then they're only, so to speak, motivated by what we call instinct, not taiva, not lust. You know exactly when to push back. And you try to feed the baby more, that's it, the baby's done. Finished. What should we do? We should not eat to satiation. Rambam says, never eat till you're full. One quarter empty, he says, or a third empty, because you have enough already. You can live now. We have to understand that the reason that the body has hunger is only because it's a reflection of the neshama. And the moment you have enough, genug, don't overdo it. Just like this reality is in our realm, so it is also on higher. The masha neshama ma'al saguf, just like the body fills the soul fills the body. So too, says the Gemara in Brachas, God, so to speak, proverbially fills the world. So what's the idea of keeping godliness connected to this world? Just like you keep body and soul together, what do you use? Lechem, bread. So how do we keep godliness in this world? The soul, the vitality in this world? Lechem, bread, karbonis. Karbonis is mechaber elum HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now you understand why it's such a disaster we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Now you understand what the meaning of not having karbonis. It's like being on a starvation diet for 2,000 years. So you ask a good question. How are we alive? How is the world sustained without karbanos? It's an excellent question. The answer is not as good as the question. Whatever. We're getting by. The world is faint, comatose. We have prayer, we have learning Torah, we have different things. It's a problem. And that, my friends, is the difference between karbanos and the sachim, between the offerings and libations. The hine achibor, the ha'ilum ha'makadosh baruch hu, ubein b'pnimis ubein b'chitzein yishachayis. The link between godliness in our world is both in an inner track as well as superficial or atmospheric. The Hinik Sivit says, V'achayas Ratzi V'shoiv, that the angels, symbolic of the godliness in our world, are rushing forward and then returning and collapsing. And rushing forward, returning and collapsing. Ukebuvur Mecham V'kemis has explained in many different places in Chassidus, the Hainu Shachayas Ha'ilu Mutamu De'Beis Tenuas, that the life, if you will, the flow of life, the ebb and flow of life, always has ebb and flow. Ratzi v'shoiv. There's a mimer from the Rebbe Rashab where he says, if you look at the material world, you'll see an ebb and flow in everything. From the oceans that crash onto the seashore and then recede back into the sea, and then crash back in and then recede, from the leaves that rustle because the wind blows one way and then the wind blows the other way, down to the mood of a person, which goes up and then down. Everything that's alive is in a state of flux. It's always moving. And this is Ratzi V'Shev. Even the mineral world experiences this. With erosion, the wind erodes things, and at the same time, substances like sand are added, and things actually become thicker and larger and bigger. So erosion goes two ways. The mountains are eroded, the mountains also grow. Everything in the world is experiencing change, and it's always Ratzi V'Shev, an ebb and a flow. So al derech zeh, b'b'chinas shev nichol gam ratzi. That within ratzi is also shev. The inyan ar ratzi, the rush forward, chayach l'chitzenius achayis. That represents the outer realm of existence. Inyan ar shev v'amshachas p'nimius achayis. Idea of shev, what's going on inside. So the person says, I'm so bored. I have to go and do something exciting. It's all superficial. It's all glitzy, glamour. He's looking for something outside of his life. And then he realizes the glamour is not found outside, that your own family and your own hearth and your own home, and that's the Pnimi Sechayis. And that's when a person reaches inner serenity, inner peace, and that's the beauty of Shabbos and so on and so forth. And this, my friends, is the difference between Korbanos and Nesachim, offerings, libations. Korbanos, the offering represents the fire that rages. That's Ratzoy. Halo Mulmata Lomaila. Inyan Amasidas Nefesh. That represents the fiery yearning for God, the willingness to leave it all behind. To get swept up in holy fervor of closeness to Hashem, which is like Krishma. The idea of Nesachim, that's the Hamshacha. Lomato Lomaila, actualization, that brings it down, which is like Tefillin. And now we understand that an enigmatic statement of the Gemara, that somebody who puts on, says Shema without putting on Tefillin, is like bringing a korban up Nesachim. The point is to have an inspirational Yiddishkeit experience and not do any mitzvahs. They speak to these professional Jews. So what are you trying to accomplish? We want to inspire Jews. We want to create excitement. We want people to be prideful of their Jewishness. And then we're going to be not prideful. So we're going to be more prideful. We'll go on another trip and we'll make another concert. And then I don't know, then we'll just do it again. What's the point?
But that's using the world to get up there again. That's
you have to get up, but then you have to bring it down. Of what value is inspiration if it's not translated into concrete actual mitzvahs?
But you don't think that that has any mitzvah effect on people?
A mitzvah effect has to be harnessed. Reading Shema is beautiful. Don't do it without tefillin. That's why I have to work around tefillin all the time. I have to take all these Jews who feel so proud to be Jewish. Do a mitzvah. Mm-hmm. Just do a mitzvah. Oh, Rabbi, leave me alone. I don't feel like tefillin. I know. That's the right thing to do. You may not feel like a lot of things. But doing the mitzvah is what it's all about. And this is the message. Why did this come when it came to going into Eretz Yisrael? Because what was the mistake of the Meraglim? They said, we want to be holy and spiritual. The land of Israel will bog us down. The land of Israel will atrophy our spirituality. It will disable us from yearning for Hashem. We'll become so earthy, so mud-minded. We'll be so involved in politics and everyday life and waste removal. Are you kidding? How are you going to be a holy Jew living in the land of Israel? Moshe Rabbeinu said, excellent theory. Dead wrong. I said, what do you mean? It's a great theory. You said so yourself. I said, Moshe, because here's what you're missing. Actualization. The whole point of the inspiration, the whole point of all that yearning for Hashem is nesachim, libation, actualize. And therefore, in the desert, they couldn't bring a nesach. Because the point was never to settle the desert. The point was never to make the desert bloom. The point was to make the land of Israel verdant and green. The point was to develop Yishuv Ha'aretz. When you get to the land of Israel, that's when the Nesachim start. And that's why until the mistake of the Meraglim, it wasn't necessary for God to talk about this mitzvah. The truth is, the mitzvah only was relevant once we get to Israel. But at this point, the Jewish people needed to understand why going to Israel was so important. Because they could make such a tragic mistake, because they could be so misguided spiritually, Moshe Rabbeinu is told by Hashem, tell them about Nesachim. Because clearly they missed the point. They need to understand why, if you don't actualize, you have nothing.
So that means when you're kind of depressed or something, that's when you should do a mitzvah to bring God into your life.
That's absolutely correct. If you're feeling low and you're not inspired, what should you do? Do a mitzvah. And guess what? When you create vessels for the spirit, for the soul, because of the mitzvahs you did, that actually brings soul and life into you. It brings you a sense of joy. As we know that the greatest joy happens when you give to others. We do fathers.
Was tefillin actually worn in the desert or only in Israel?
Tefillin were certainly worn in the desert, but the tefillin were slightly different than ours because they were missing several parshias of tefillin. They had empty compartments for the first few decades. Only in the end were those compartments filled. But yes, most certainly tefillin were worn in the desert. At any rate, we're out of time. The point, of course, is actualization. Take all the fervor, all the good feelings, and hammer it down and make it real. And with this, we express our hope and our prayer that Hashem will finally bring this to fruition with the coming of Mashiach and bringing it all lamata into our realm. Thank you, everybody, for joining us all week long for Torah learning. Next week, we have a special week of learning in preparation for Gimel Tammuz to be announced.